From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on April 8th, 2024, at South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. On this episode of The Lead, we preview the week ahead in the State House. We give you a 30,000-foot view of who's filed for State House and U.S. House seats. We hear reaction from Senator Lindsey Graham in a Washington Post story about former President Donald Trump's secret plan on how he intends to end the Russia-Ukraine war. And we have a feature from Victoria Hansen on Charleston's new mayor and much more. The Lead loves hearing from everyone. That's why we have our voicemail box set up at 803-563-7169. Let us know your name, where you're calling from, how your spring break was slash is. Did you see the eclipse? Partial or full? Let us know. Bring back those 2017 memories. 803-563-7169. The legislature is back with 5 weeks left to go until sine die, the last day of session on May 9th. Looking at this week in the Senate, the chamber will be in perfunctory session as the Finance Committee, which is made up of half of the Senate's 46 members, begins finalizing its spending plan, which will be on the floor in 2 weeks. When the House is back on Tuesday, it will be working through its 11-page calendar because Wednesday is
crossover day.
That's right. We expect a longer Tuesday and Wednesday as House members work to get bills out of the chamber and over to the Senate for its consideration, as there are 15 legislative days left in this two-year session, which ends sine die May 9th, like I said. If a bill doesn't make it over to the other chamber by Wednesday, the likelihood of it making it out of the State House and to the governor's desk is exponentially higher. So think of all those crazy bills that were filed and talked about in all the headlines.
Yes.
But some of them, most of them, all of them, almost, never even got a subcommittee hearing.
Wow.
So see you next year.
Oh, no!
Now, bills can still move if they get a vote of two-thirds or more, but again, hard to see them getting to the governor's desk. That's a high bar to cross, to climb, to jump over, to clear at this time in the session. And of course, after sine die, all the bills that aren't in committees or going to the governor's desk are dead, and new ones have to be filed next year for the session. RIP in power. And both chambers will still have committees working on bills that have made it to the opposite chambers. For example, remember the Senate-approved medical marijuana bill?
Yes.
It still hasn't had a hearing, and there are other bills like that as well in both chambers. So the sine-die sprint is underway, and you better believe all the arm-twisting backroom politics that come with it. Well, that's going on. We'll see what gets heard, when, what's alive, what's dead, etc. in full force these next few days. Also on the schedule this week, Governor Henry McMaster and First Lady Peggy McMaster will join Darlington Raceway and NASCAR officials for a press conference at the governor's mansion Tuesday afternoon. The Goodyear 400 is Mother's Day weekend, May 12th. Sticking with the governor, McMaster underwent a minor outpatient orthopedic knee surgery on April 4th to address a slight meniscus tear he suffered in 2022 while playing tennis with Peggy. The elective surgery lasted less than 30 minutes, during which time the governor was under general anesthesia. Dr. Jeffrey Guy, the governor's orthopedist, said in a statement, quote, "Governor McMaster had a minor procedure this morning to correct a cartilage injury in his knee. His arthroscopic procedure lasted less than 30 minutes and was without incident. No post-procedure limitations are expected." McMaster, who was 76, notified Lieutenant Governor Pamela Evett of this procedure the day before it took place. McMaster was set to resume his regular work schedule the same day as his procedure, but he only has one public event on his schedule this week. Next up, filing has closed for candidates running for state Senate, House, and U.S. House of Representatives. We'll be focused on incumbents who face primary challengers, as well as those open seats where there will be multiple folks running in either or both parties that will be part of the June 11th primary. After that, we'll gear up for the general election campaign season, with more emphasis coming post-Labor Day. But right now, all seven of the state's congressional district seats do have challengers come November. The state's lone Democratic Congressman Jim Clyburn faces no primary challenge, but will have a Republican challenge this fall, though in his heavily Democratic district, he should have no problem securing a 17th term. 5th District Congressman Ralph Norman in Rock Hill and 7th District Congressman Russell Fry in the Myrtle Beach area face no primary challengers. 1st District Congresswoman Nancy Mace faces two Republican challengers as she seeks her third term. former DHEC chief and 2018 gubernatorial candidate Catherine Templeton, and Bill Young. Three Democrats are seeking the nomination, including Mac Defford, Michael Moore, and Ben Frazier. Up to the 3rd District, where Congressman Jeff Duncan from Seneca is not seeking re-election. That has led to 8 Republicans jumping into the race and 2 Democrats seeking the nomination for the heavily Republican district. 4th District Congressman William Timmons of Greenville, who was endorsed by Trump, like Nancy Mace was also, has drawn State Representative Adam Morgan, who is the head of the far-right House Freedom Caucus, as Timmons seeks to win a 3rd term. Though allegations of an affair which ended his marriage will be a strong undercurrent in the race in the conservative Bible Belt area where family values are a major issue. Spartanburg Democratic Party Chairwoman Catherine Harvey will face whoever wins the Republican nomination come November, as well as a Constitution Party candidate. In the State House, all 124 House members and 46 senators are up for re-election. The Senate is up every 4 years, and the House, like their federal counterparts, are up every 2 years. Now, some races of note in the Senate center around the sister senators. The 3 Republican, 1 Democrat, and 1 independent senator who helped block a near-total abortion ban in conjunction with Democrats and several Republicans. The independent Mia McLeod from Richland County is not running for re-election, and 3 Democrats have filed to run. Republican Senators Katrina Sheely, Sandy Sin, and Penry Gustafson all have challengers. Democratic Senator Margie Brandt Matthews doesn't. The South Carolina Republican Party said it has officially certified over 600 candidates to be on the SCGOP's primary ballot. This list was certified and signed by Chairman Drew McKissick and has been sent to the State Election Commission. McKissick said in a statement, quote, "This record-breaking filing season for the South Carolina Republican Party speaks volumes to the enthusiasm in our party. I commend the candidates that are seeking office to uphold our conservative values that continue to bring prosperity to the Palmetto State," quote. Now for you, the voter. The voter registration deadline is, wanna guess, May 12th.
Dude.
May the 12th be with you.
Nice.
That's about a month away from now, and early voting starts on May 28th. May 28th be with you. AT will have a baby at this point, folks.
Interesting.
Now hop onto scvotes.org to register or to learn more about the process. scvotes.org. You got time. Now, you may remember the feature we aired from Victoria Hansen recently on Mayor Reggie Burgess, the newly elected North Charleston mayor. Well, we bring you another feature by Victoria, this one on Charleston's new mayor, William Cogswell.
Growing up in Charleston, William Cogswell knew there was something special about the city. People from around the world come to visit, touring his antebellum homes and cobblestone streets.
It just instilled a sense of pride that I think you don't see a lot of in other communities.
But the 48-year-old never imagined he would serve as Charleston's mayor.
No, because Joe Riley was about a block away, and we just figured he'd be there forever, so.
Cogswell jokes about being raised near longtime Mayor Joe Riley, who was elected to an unprecedented 10 terms before retiring. Another Charlestonian, John Tecklenburg, took his place until Cogswell challenged and defeated Tecklenburg last year in a razor-thin runoff race. Sworn in 3 months ago,
as mayor of the municipality of Charleston,
Cogswell is Charleston's first Republican mayor since Reconstruction.
I think it's going to be on my tombstone.
It's a title the former State House representative doesn't think much of.
It's not really relevant to me. I consider myself to be the mayor of everyone.
Technically, the position is nonpartisan. And Cogswell, he's taking the historic city's helm at a precarious time. Charleston faces severe growing pains, increased flooding, and record storms.
I believe in sea level rise. I've seen it. Like I say, I've lived here my whole life.
Scientists predict sea levels along the Atlantic coast will rise by more than a foot over the next 30 years.
We need to act rather than talk about it.
Last month, the mayor broke ground on yet another phase of repairing the Low Battery seawall. At the tip of the peninsula, giant machines drill holes for pilings to secure the wall, guarding the city from harbor swells. Cogswell says he's working with the Army Corps of Engineers on additional protection and enacting city flood plans before heavy rain falls. Another concern, affordable housing, as a post-pandemic surge of newcomers pushes demand and prices higher.
It is probably our biggest economic development issue and social issue for that matter.
Cogswell says he will build 1,500 affordable homes in the next 4 to 5 years. As for future construction, in a city that's seen its share of cranes recently, Coxwell says it must be responsible, and his work as a real estate developer will help.
To make sure that what is built is in keeping with what the city of Charleston deserves.
That message resonates with longtime resident Buddy Jenrette, who worries there's already too much new construction.
We've taken away a lot of surface percolating areas where, you know, rain and water could be absorbed, and I think that's maybe contributed to the flooding.
Jenrette says flooding downtown is the worst he's seen in 50 years. Born in Charleston, Ruthie Snyder sits on a stoop. She's grateful she found public housing.
They need more housing. Not only that, there's a lot of homeless people out here that they need a place.
Snyder has been homeless before. Back in Cogswell's office, the new mayor reflects on the people he now serves.
Incredible residents that love their city. Even in their complaints are sincere. They want to make it a better place.
Behind Cogswell, propped up against a wall, is a sign that reads, "Nice Dream." It's a gift, he says, from his wife, and a reminder that problems, no matter how big, can be solved.
Thanks for that report, Victoria. You can find that and more on SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. The Washington Post published a story Sunday about former President Donald Trump's plan to end the Ukraine-Russia war, something he consistently touts on the campaign trail as being able to do within 24 hours of becoming president. However, he never elaborates on how he would do that. Reporting by Isaac Arnsdorf, Josh Dossi, and Michael Birnbaum found, quote, "Trump's proposal consists of pushing Ukraine to cede Crimea and the Donbass border region to Russia," according to people who have discussed it with Trump or his advisors. Accepting Russian control over parts of Ukraine would expand the reach of Putin's dictatorship after what has been the biggest land war in Europe since World War II. Some of Trump's supporters have been trying to persuade him against such an outcome. And that's why I'm bringing this up, because in the article, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, a one-time Trump critic turned ally, is quoted saying, quote, "I've been spending 100% of my time talking to Trump about Ukraine. He has to pay a price. He can't win at the end of this," Graham said, speaking of Putin. Graham also said he was warned against giving Russia desired land and wants Trump to embrace a pathway forward for Ukraine to join NATO. He said, quote, "The way you end this war to me is you make sure Ukraine gets into NATO and the EU. Trump doesn't say much about that. I don't know if he's thought too much about it," end quote. And just tying all this up, Michael Kaufman, an analyst of the Russia-Ukraine war at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, which is a nonpartisan research center, said, quote, "No amount of leverage the United States has is likely to compel Ukrainian leadership to engage in policies that would constitute domestic political suicide. And no amount of leverage the United States has can compel Ukraine to cede territory or engage in these types of concessions. This is a situation where if you're willing to give a hand, the other side will quickly want the rest of the arm," quote. And we'll have more on international affairs next week when I speak with NPR's Paris correspondent, Eleanor Beardsley, who will be in town and on set on This Week in South Carolina. You might know that Eleanor Beardsley is a South Carolina native. That's right, so stay tuned. She is NPR royalty too, folks. Speaking of our U.S. senators, last week, Senator Tim Scott launched a new video series titled America's Starting Five, featuring the five Black Republican members of Congress: Representative Burgess Owens of Utah, Representative Byron Donalds of Florida, Representative John James of Michigan, and Representative Wesley Hunt of Texas, as well as Senator Scott. The series features a roundtable discussion with Scott, and the first episode discusses President Joe Biden's "You Ain't Black" comments, what it means to be a Black Republican, and the growing coalition of Black Republicans. And we got some infrastructure news, a little pivot here from Congress. The SCDOT Commission voted to name the I-20-26 exchange after former Secretary Christy Hull. That's right. Chair of the SCDOT Commission, Pamela Christopher, said, quote, "The commission knew we wanted to name the I-20 and I-26 interchange after Secretary Hull as a testament to her tireless work with SCDOT. Hall said, "I am humbled that the commission would choose this interchange to dedicate to me. This project has been a long time coming and one of the largest projects ever undertaken in the history of SCDOT," quote. Naming one of the most dysfunctional, soon-to-be state-of-the-art interchanges in the state after Hall is pretty much a metaphor of how she transformed the agency during her tenure, which included her stint as secretary from 2015 to the end of last month. The South Carolina Senate unanimously confirmed Hall's replacement, Justin Powell, on April 2nd. He's being sworn in on April 9th and has announced several new members of the agency's leadership team. Secretary Powell also listens to this podcast.
Oh, how you doing?
And on the way out, some depressing news. I'm sorry, but in a statement, Mothers Against Drunk Driving South Carolina is horrified that the state has suffered its highest number of annual drunk driving deaths on record. According to new 2022 data released by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, alcohol-related deaths in South Carolina rose by double-digit percentages for yet another year, up to 474, which is 72% higher than 2019. These figures now put South Carolina as the fifth highest state for drunk driving deaths, which is completely unacceptable, according to the organization, for a state that is 23rd in population. North Carolina has double the population, for example, of South Carolina, but fewer drunk driving deaths, illustrating how extreme our state's problem is, even compared to our closest neighbors. Now, this statement from Matt continued by saying overall traffic fatalities for the state actually dropped by 104 from 2021 to 2022, but the percentage of those fatalities attributed to drunk driving rose to 43%, also the highest in the nation. Stephen Burrett, MAD Regional Executive Director for South Carolina and North Carolina, said in a statement that legislation that will go in effect in May requiring all convicted DUI offenders to have an ignition interlock device installed in the vehicle is one sign of hope for reductions in the future. However, he says the strength of South Carolina DUI laws still lags far behind other states. And just for some context, nationally, 13,524 people died in drunk driving crashes. That's a 0.07% decrease from the prior year. The lead says, please don't drive tipsy, drunk, or impaired, or however you want to couch it, folks. Just don't do it. Be smart out there. You can ruin your life or others. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We're glad you're here. A.T. Shire is also here, folks, producer of the Lead podcast is here with us.
Calm down, folks.
It's enough.
You're making him mad. Oh, Gavin, it's so good to see you back here.
I know.
I was dead before. Who knows what happens during those eclipses? We waited to record till after. Gavin and I
just to be safe.
We didn't wear the glasses. We just stared at it.
Look for a little bit like a little treat.
It's a treat for your eyes. I can't see much. Mostly they're just...
I'm going by touch.
Yeah.
We're going by touch now.
We're going to be a braille-forward podcast after this.
I can see slight shapes.
Okay, Gavin, we're back. We're in studio.
We're in studio. Spring break's over.
Thank God.
Yeah, next stop, Sine Die.
Disgusting vacations done.
You know, I was getting so tired of my vacation.
I know. You don't like it.
But honestly, I do need a vacation for my vacation.
Oh, you're telling me what you're telling me.
So the lead will be off the air for the next month.
Yeah, next five, 6 weeks, we're just going
to
play the same episode over and over again.
Take a break again.
Anyway, Gavin, we got a call. And we're going to have to mea culpa afterwards, okay? Yeah, we're going to have to offer a retraction and apologies. So are you ready?
Yes, I'm preparing to apologize, okay. Which is so rare for me to do.
Yeah, he doesn't do it much, folks. Okay, here we go.
Hey, fellas, this is Jen up in Greenville. I called, I don't know, some while ago. I don't know if it was like a year ago or 2 years ago at this point. But anyway, I am also mom of Adrian and wanted to clear a couple things up. Adrian is a youngster, a fourth grader. But Adrian is a boy and was just like a wee bit offended and baffled as to why you might think he was a girl. I completely can see why you might think he was a girl. They all kind of sound the same for like the first, I don't know, 12 years anyway. So yeah, but he was super excited. So thanks for playing his call. And also wanted to let you know that right after he listened to that first episode, he wanted to listen to another one, I think the next day, and I was like, well, it's not daily. And he was like, well, we can listen to an old one. So I had to re-listen to your previous episode. So he's that much of a fan, and he's big in the show. Thanks for the news and all that. And just wanted to weigh in on the whole water bathroom situation. Like, I don't understand why this water situation is necessary. I mean, it's liquid soap. There's already water in it. Seems like you could go either way you want to go with that. And I think it's like sulfates anyway that make the suds, and they're not like killing anything. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not like, don't quote me on that science, but I don't really think you need to water up first. I don't know why it matters, but I also, I'm going to admit, I don't water up first if it's those like sudsy ones, the ones that come out foamy. I do get extra foam though, because I need a little more, like, you know, there's too much friction otherwise. But if it comes out foamy, I just start scrubbing and scrub and scrub and then rinse. So I'm weighing in on that. Also, the person who took your paper towel is, I don't know, a cretin. So thanks.
Jen, thank you for calling and for clarifying that. We apologize. Oh. Sometimes, you know, it's the phone and headphones. I can't really hear.
I think we have.
We know a lot of Adrians that are women.
This is why I'll put it here that the president and CEO of our boss is named Adrian.
Adrian Farewell.
I just sort of default to that, and I apologize. It's our fault. We do not want to lose your Adrian.
Yes, Adrian, please. Please keep listening, brother. We appreciate it. And I love that he's like, I need more.
I'm gonna go fall on a sword after this. Gavin's going to go fall on a sword. It's sort of a pact that we have. If one goes, we both go. So,
but if he needs to get his fix in between episodes, check out South of Spooky, Jen, because I think he's going to like it a lot.
He's going to like it a lot. I can guarantee it. And also, if you text your address to the...
We'll send you some swag.
We'll send some swag for Adrian, because we really are... We're really sorry.
And Jen, to that effect, I'm gonna go ahead and let you just do your soap thing. You know, I let everyone do their own thing. I don't weigh in like that too badly. Like some people on this podcast like to tell people what they should and shouldn't do.
Thank you. Yes.
But I'm happy that you're happy.
I was
gripping my hands tight.
there are now like finger scrapes.
I need to go wash my hands now.
He did not like that. And I definitely need a few extra pumps of the pre-foamy one. So I'm with you there, Jen. I do a lot. And so, I mean, I can see how that one spreads well. It's the liquid soaps. They don't spread right. You got to dilute them a little.
How are you going to turn the water on? Like, unless it's a
auto. Or you turn the water on first.
Think about it. It's running. You see it running, and you're like, not yet.
Gonna make you wait.
Oh, God, I'm gripping the table again.
He hates it. Anyway, Gavin, I have some good news here. Before we go, I got some good news.
Okay, good news with AT.
Yeah, I think...
It's a contradictory segment, but yes.
I think that a lot of elder millennials and younger will relate to this because... So I just got a new phone, brag, okay? Got a new phone,
there
brag.
We go. Okay.
And it was super easy to set up where I literally just turned the new one on and it was like, am I next to your old phone? I pressed a button and it just...
iPhone does that too.
I know that. But this was the first time, I think I got a new phone like 3 years ago. And this was the first time that when I got into that phone and started using it, I didn't have to teach it all my swear words again.
Seamless.
It knew every swear word I'd ever put in my own personal, so there was no more like ducking shot, you know what I mean? it was ready for me to use, and I can't tell you how many phones I've had to be like, no, not ducking, or not like, shot, and I'm assuming, what like, is this?
I mean, that's the peak right there, because if we're talking like all the messages are there, the phone numbers are there, everything else is still there.
Yeah, you've stolen my data.
And now we've
gotten
so good that we're now getting down to the swear words. Whereas some people, like poor Amy, producer Amy, like just got a new work phone, didn't back it up and didn't restore from a backup. So, of course, I think it happened to my aunt too. But I got a new work phone. I was like, hold on, let me download to the computer. Let me connect it again.
I've never had it be
this
good.
But it's always an ordeal, regardless.
When you're typing, it's never right.
No.
It's never right.
It's still not right.
And you got like 3 weeks until it's like, finally, this is my phone. No, out the box,
and
my phone.
Apple has finally come to terms with the duck situation.
Yes.
But it's still not what it needs to be.
The duck in the room.
The duck and shot. The shot duck.
Yeah, I was pretty pleased by
if
that.
If you know, right,
like,
gang?
It's truly one of the things I do immediately. So it was just, it was a great experience, and I got to applaud modern technology. Honestly, you've been spying on us long enough. You might as well
please
get
adapt if you're going to do this.
Get with the 21st
the wind down
century.
Sponsored by Android.
Yes, thank you. And I am an Android person.
This is you pushing big Android on us.
I am a green bubble supremacist. Okay.
And now the Federal Trade Commission's taken Apple to task because of the green bubble.
That's
so
right.
That's
right.
What you get.
Hey, that I was actually, I didn't want to say this, but I was inside on that deal, and I pushed them over the line.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yep.
What
right.
about the video? Can you get the video to not be compressed or
that's,
all pixelated?
That's also coming. Yep.
Don't worry. Oh, dang, that.
That's next.
I can't say anymore, but that's next.
Anyway, people.
Wow, folks.
Please call in. Adrian, we're still sorry.
We love you, Adrian. Keep listening, please. We can't lose the young listeners.
No.
We need to get every one of them. But be like Adrian. Be like Jen. Give us a shout. 803-563-7169. We'd love hearing from you guys. Let us know what's going on in your world. Weigh in on your horror stories when it comes to getting a new phone. Or your beautiful, beautiful transition stories like AT's with it just being seamless. We would love to hear that, too. You can always leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, and you can stay up to date with the latest news on scetv.org and southcarolinapublicradio.org, and don't forget to support your local newspapers. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
No, you have a mustache?
Yeah, Doc. Yeah.
Oh, no need to come in.
Oh,
no need to come in.
You're okay.
No need at all.
I'm pretty sure I wasn't being made fun of. My dad said I wasn't.